This is Lee Hazelwood.
And Nancy Sinatra.
You know, some velvet morning when I'm straight, I'm gonna turn on
WGXC Macra Hudson Catskill.
Hey, cowboy, where'd you get that funny hat?
90.7 FM.
The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Pat Linen in Hillsdale, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Paul Kirby reports for the Daily Freeman that Assemblyperson Sarah Hannah Stresta met on November 21st with top executives of Central Hudson Gas and Electric Corp. and explained her opposition to proposed rate increases. She said, and I quote, "At our in-person meeting, I explained our position for why we want to see a rate decrease. Our constituents feel more helpless than angry at this point, and while we recognize other sources of economic pressure, especially housing, we reiterated to CEO Capone that a rate increase would worsen people's trust in Central Hudson," end quote. Central Hudson wants the New York Public Service Commission to approve their request to increase electric rates by 16% and natural gas rates by 19%. The company is under investigation by the Department of Public Service because of billing problems. Central Hudson spokesperson Joseph Jenkins said of the meeting with Stresta that, and I quote, "The two discussed many of the key initiatives that Central Hudson is working on now, including the implementation of our monthly meter reading plan and the current performance metrics of our billing system," end quote. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. The Ankrum Opera House is the last local opera house to give up its name. In early American history, the Preservation League of New York State says, and I quote, "The opera house was not only a venue for theater and cultural events and cultural activities, but also functioned as the heart of a community and a gathering place to relax and socialize," end quote. In 2017, the Hudson Opera House abandoned the name, switching to Hudson Hall. Now, the Ankrum Opera House announced on November 25th that the Ankrum Opera House will now be called the Ankrum Center for the Arts. They said they made the change because they are also using a neighboring building to the Ankrum Opera House, which they call the Annex. Their social media statement about the change said, and I quote, "The expansion underway has inspired this pivotal change, aligning our identity more closely with our vibrant array of performances and community events. While celebrating a rich heritage, Ankrum Center embraces a forward-looking approach to enriching the region through the arts for years to come," end quote. Liz Montgomery reports for Porcupine Soup that Susan Lisbon, a Catskill resident and one of the Ceramics Open Studio students at Columbia Green Community College, will be the first artist with a permanent outdoor sculpture on the school's campus. The sculpture, called Presence, is taller than most people and almost looks human-like, with two thick legs and an assortment of protrusions. Lisbon said, and I quote, "The work was very physical, working with a few hundred pounds of clay and, at times, standing on a table to reach the sculpture. Each section had to be fired separately, with a few strong people lifting the piece into the kiln," end quote. Lisbon donated the sculpture to the college, which will be placed in front of the arts building. The sculpture will be dedicated at 12:30 p.m. on Thursday, November 30th, and members of the public are welcome to attend. And you can read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, November 29th. Local early morning temperatures range from 17 degrees in Tannersville to 27 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 39 degrees. It looks like those ground temperatures are going to steadily decline, setting up a nice cold soil to support heavier snow amounts. And you can see why after starting out in the 20s today, we hit only 36 degrees at 2 p.m. It will be partly cloudy until midnight, then clear skies let the temperature drop to 24 degrees. Tomorrow gets a bit warmer, hitting 45 at 2 p.m. Overnight, a dip to 33 degrees takes us into a pretty wet but relatively warm Friday, rain all day with a high of 45. Saturday, still wet, high of 43. Sunset today will be at 4:13 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:59 a.m. Looking way up, we see the incoming Hadouken expected for tomorrow and Friday have raised a G3 class geomagnetic storm watch. That could possibly cause some trouble for satellites and auroras for us. X-class flare chances are at 10%. Plasma winds will be average at 436 kilometers per second with an average density of 6 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently pretty bad till dark, then fair below 15 megahertz overnight. There are no chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 130, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Radio? Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream to the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue the mountain. Okay, 25,000 cheering extras. Now, you want to try that on television?
Well...
You see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Doesn't television stretch the imagination?
Up to 21 inches, yes.
We'll be right back. front line. Quite the opposite, I'm safe inside. But I worry and I give money and I feel useless behind this computer. And that's just barely scratched the surface of my mind. So I do.
New music there from Paramore. News is the name of that song.
We got Devin Connolly on the line right now from Cornell Cooperative Extension to talk about all the good stuff happening right now. Devin, welcome again to the Monday Afternoon Show.
Hi, Kieran. Happy to be here. Thank you again for having me.
Thank you for being here. It's always a pleasure, and I always love to hear about the good stuff happening with you folks and what you're putting on over there. How was your Thanksgiving?
Pretty good. Had some family over. I hosted this year. I didn't dry out the turkey too much. But I think everyone was still pretty happy. Everyone went home with leftovers. So great feasting experience. Lots to be grateful for.
Good. Did you stuff yourself?
Absolutely. I can't stop. Every year I tell myself, this is going to be the year that I don't do it. And no, it's always next year.
Yep. I only did 2 plates this year, though. Big plates. So happy post-Thanksgiving and all the madness that comes after that between now and Christmas. There's Christmas carols are happening. Christmas trees are going up everywhere. It's the mayhem and people in the streets just buying stuff everywhere. It's ironically, it's a nice time of year for a lot of people. Also, ironically, it's also really annoying for a lot of people. I'm sure you know people that get annoyed at this time of year.
Definitely seen one or two before.
Yeah, there's a few of them out there. Anyway, so tell me, how is it going with Cornell Cooperative Extension and what's going on in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, so for December, we have coming up, it's actually sort of a short list. Both of our gardening wreath making classes have completely sold out. So I'm just not going to put in any more details about that. But first, we have coming up on December 1st. It starts at 8 a.m. in ACRA. It's a train logger certification class. I think we've mentioned these before, how we're working with TLC to, you know, help loggers stay certified in the area. This one is about first aid and CPR. Sorry. So first aid and CPR meets both TLC and OSHA workplace requirements. By attending this course, you will learn how to respond to first aid, breathing, and cardiac emergencies. Successful students will receive a certificate of adult first aid and CPR valid for 2 years. This is hosted by Mark Rossi from Delaware County Emergency Services. We've done a class with him, or I've done a class with him. He's great. If you're interested in registering, please email Tracy Testo at tet35@cornell.edu. If you don't, hear me clearly, or if you get that information, you know, you always go online and find our event page at ccecolumbiagreen.org/events. And yeah, so that's the first class we have going on. What else do we have?
Is that mostly safety and logistics, sort of chainsaw safety and stuff like that orientated?
So this actually is not, this one is not, sometimes they do chainsaw safety classes. This one is actually just first aid and CPR. So okay. Useful not only in, like, you know, the woods, but probably anywhere that where there could be an emergency.
So this is kind of for if the safety part didn't work.
Yes, exactly.
Step like, two.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
If your pre safety stuff has failed you and the worst has happened, this is where you want to be able to, you know, handle, you know, basic first aid and also CPR. You know, hopefully it never comes to that though.
Right. Hopefully. Stay safe, everyone.
Yeah. Next program we have coming up is our final Think Differently Columbia class of the year. Think Differently was three trainings that were meant to welcome people with different abilities and challenges into our communities. Our final one is called Let's Play, Learning Through Play for Individuals with ASD. And this is on Monday, December 4th at 5:30 at the Extension Education Center in Hudson. This training is designed to provide parents, caregivers with a basic framework for how play develops throughout childhood and how that may present differently for individuals with autism. Discussion of several practical strategies for supporting play developed in simple ways are provided throughout the training. Parents and caregivers will also learn how to use play to help develop other critical skills such as social language, motor, and cognitive skills. You also receive a planning tool that is provided to help organize ideas and taking play to the next level. So, and this is going to be with our executive director, Lisa Galina. If you know anyone who has a child or is taking care of someone who is on the autism spectrum, feel free to sign up for this course. Again, you can find all the links at ccecolumbiagreen.org/events.
Great service right there. The numbers are pretty staggering these days. It's like almost like 1 in 10, I think, for children diagnosed with some sort of condition on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. I mean, just from, like, you know, personal story, it just feels like it seems to be happening more frequently. I wonder if we're just, like, getting better at recognizing the symptoms of, like, you know, ASD or, you know, what's going on there.
Well, great. That's happening.
Yeah. And finally, most important to CC, at least, we will be hosting our annual meeting on December 12th at 6:30 in ACRA. The Board of Directors and Staff of Cornell Cooperative Extension invites the public to join us for our association's annual meeting. There will be recognition of volunteers and staff, as well as a brief business meeting. And if you register, you have to do it before December 7th. What this does is allows you to vote on our, you know, upcoming board elections. If you are a resident of Columbia or Greene County, please sign up. We would love to hear your votes, and we appreciate to see you there. And light refreshments will be served. I don't know if Wave Farm has an annual meeting that they have to have, but it's in our constitution that the public is invited to this meeting every year.
It's so important to run it for the smooth running of any organization, and in particular, yeah, by law, as a 501c3, a nonprofit organization. Are you guys a nonprofit?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we fall under the exact same, mm-hmm. You know, rules and regulations of having a board of directors, having, a treasurer, you know, the whole deal. So yeah, we're familiar with that structure, but it's so important for people to come together and just reflect and put their minds together on how to keep an organization running together. That's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it for December. Again, we're getting into, like, you know, the end of the year, things are starting to wrap up instead of get going. We're just finishing up our annual reports. We have some staff that are finishing up a large grant involving ginseng, which I'll be able to talk about, I think, well, hint at now, but be able to talk more in depth later, possibly going into January. should be a fun project that will be a fun announcement. Yeah, I think that's it for CCE at the moment.
I'd love to know more about ginseng. I remember some years ago we were looking at different agroforestry possibilities and agriculture when we were looking for land and farms out there in the Catskills and in Columbia County. And turns out that the Catskill Mountains has favorable conditions and climate for growing ginseng.
Mm-hmm.
That's so cool. And I had no idea that you could even grow ginseng out here.
Mm-hmm.
Just didn't never really cross. And so I talked to this kid who was really geeking out on the whole ginseng thing. And he said that the Chinese were actually buying up ginseng all around the world, wherever they could find it, because the demand in China being so great for actually all agricultural products, because I think China's probably eating up a lot of their agricultural land right now,
mm-hmm.
which is also probably why they're buying a bunch of U.S. land right now. But anyways, so I thought that was fascinating that the Chinese were willing to pay top dollar. And then he went on to say that there's certain varieties of ginseng that you can grow that are just like astronomical in price. Have you heard about this ginseng mafia secret society of expensive ginseng growers?
I don't know about the secret society of expensive ginseng growers, but I'm talking to the late, great Bob Boythus, who passed away in the last year. But yeah, he used to teach everyone about ginseng and talk nonstop about it. And yeah, he would be like, yeah, you can absolutely sell it to China. There's like such great demand. He's like, it's such a fun crop that you just get to get going. I got to work on some ginseng preparation this year, and it's hard work to start, but then you know, you have 20 years and then, you know, it turns into this, you know, pretty profitable plant. Sits there.
Well, I am so sorry to have missed him, never met him, and I'm so sorry we didn't get an opportunity to talk on the radio, at least. That's great that he did that work, and I'm sure lots of people are carrying the torch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you want to talk about ginseng, Tracy Testo is our go-to right now at CCE, at the Agroforestry Resource Center. She would be able to help you out with any questions you have. So, yeah, any listeners want to talk to her, her name is Tracy Testo. Email is T-E-T. Ooh, it just, what was it again? tt35@cornell.edu. Yeah, hit her up.
All right, there you go. And again, folks, if you want just the general gist of everything Cornell Cooperative Extension, go to ccecolumbiagreen.org.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Devin, it's been a pleasure as always, and keep up the good work over there and get ready to hunker down for another Columbia and Greene County winter heading our way, it looks.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I'm ready to see some snow again, actually.
Yeah, it's my sister lives in Costa Rica, and she's trying to get the whole family to move down there, and it's just, God, so tempting in so many ways. But you know, the weird, twisted thing is that I would definitely miss the seasons, including the snow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would. I definitely would. So anyway, all right, Devin, you enjoy the rest of your Monday.
I will. And you have a good rest of your Monday, Kieran. And yeah, again, thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Always a pleasure. Devin Connolly from Cornell Cooperative Extension, folks, giving you the good stuff they are engaged in over there. There's so much good work. We didn't hear about anger management. I just love the anger management classes that they do as well. But again, go to ccecolumbiagreen.org. You can find for yourself online if you're a screen person. And there it will be.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The New Mexico Supreme Court upheld a lower court's ruling on November 27th, allowing the state's congressional districts to stand. The same day, the Ohio Supreme Court upheld gerrymandered state legislature maps, which had been previously struck down by the same court. Ohio's maps ping-ponged between its partisan redistricting commission, the Ohio Supreme Court, and its legislature. The Ohio Constitution has a provision prohibiting partisan gerrymandering, so in 2021 and 2022, the court rejected the state house maps 5 times. But the retirement of a liberal justice and the appointment of a conservative replacement shifted the balance of power. In a 4-3 decision, Ohio's high court affirmed maps vehemently opposed by democracy groups. The court cited bipartisan support for the maps, but the Ohio Capital Journal reports two Democrats supporting the maps said their vote was intended to keep the map drawing away from the partisan redistricting commission. A ballot measure for an independent commission is proposed for next year. The New Mexico Supreme Court upheld a lower court which found the state had not broken rules prohibiting partisan gerrymandering when it drew its congressional districts. Map changes in the 2nd Congressional District resulted in a 4% shift, flipping the seat Democratic by less than 1%, according to the New Mexico Political Report. We have links to the local reporting and groups taking action at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I believe that anyone who puts themselves over the Constitution should never be president of the United States. And anyone who asks someone else to put them over the Constitution should never be president of the United States again.
Former Vice President Mike Pence says it's too risky to reelect former President Donald Trump. Now ABC News reports Pence has offered undisclosed details of Trump's push to overturn the 2020 election results to the special counsel team investigating him. Investigators are reportedly focused on Pence's personal notes taken after meetings with Trump shortly before the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. Pence could take the stand should the election interference case go to trial next spring. Republican presidential hopeful Nikki Haley has gained the endorsement of Americans for Prosperity, the conservative network led by billionaire Charles Koch. The network is already flooding Iowa and New Hampshire with ads backing Haley and depicting Trump as an election loser. Haley says she's still proud to have served in his administration.
And I agree with a lot of his policies. But the truth is, rightly or wrongly, chaos follows him.
With just 7 weeks until the Iowa caucuses, Trump maintains a significant lead in both national and early voting state polls. The Senate Judiciary Committee will subpoena conservative judicial activist Leonard Leo and Texas billionaire Harlan Crow for failing to cooperate with an inquiry into the ethics of Supreme Court justices. Both Crow and Leo are known to have provided some justices with luxury travel and gifts. Committee Chair Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois says justices should be held accountable like all public servants.
The 9 justices on the Supreme Court are members of a democratic form of government, not royalty.
The Supreme Court recently issued its own ethics code, but it does not specify how the rules would be enforced. The Michigan House has passed legislation to protect voters and poll workers from gun violence. It would ban guns at or near polling places or locations where ballots are counted. East Lansing City Clerk Marie Wicks says she's worried Michigan State University students won't vote without the ban following a recent campus shooting.
With at least 5 off-campus precincts with heavy student presence, I cannot fathom how triggering for them a weapon would be in a polling location.
If enacted, Michigan would join only 18 other states and Washington, D.C. that ban open carry of weapons at polling sites. House Democrats will force a vote this week to expel Republican New York Representative George Santos from Congress. This following the release of a House Ethics Committee report showing Santos broke multiple federal laws. Santos maintains his innocence, but admits to embellishing much of his resume.
I mean, if you're going to make up a lie, are you thinking at all? I just think it was a stupid decision on my part. Very stupid decision that I regret every day.
I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Everybody has been burned before. Everybody knows the pain. Anyone in this place can tell you to your face why you shouldn't try to love someone. Everybody knows it never works. Everybody knows, and me, I know that door. Just before get to the dream.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
And now, joining us once again is retired National Weather Service meteorologist Hugh Johnson for our weekly discussion of weather and climate. Welcome back, Hugh.
Well, welcome back. I hope you had a nice Thanksgiving.
Had a lovely Thanksgiving. Thank you for keeping the snow away. So,
yeah, that's good.
What
yeah.
other interesting what interesting weather took place this past week?
Well, we did get our first snow the other night, Tuesday night. A lot of places got a couple inches of the snow, a little more than I thought, but nothing really big going on catastrophically. Except there is something. There's some disturbing news out of the Antarctic. There is a glacier, a piece of the Antarctic glacial shield that broke off. It becomes an iceberg. When that happens, it was actually stationary. Has now started moving again. It's the largest glacier in the world. I think it's called A3A or something. Three times bigger than New York City, and it's on the move in the Weddell Sea, and it's moving out towards the ocean there. And the problem with these kind of, there's been a lot of melting going on in the Antarctic, more than scientists had realized before. And what's disturbing about that is it could inject a higher sea rise level than we originally thought, and that's not good news because, as you know, there's a lot of people live near sea level, so that's the last thing we need. But unfortunately, it's something that really has to be monitored because, again, this is the Arctic. This isn't the ice on the actual Arctic continent, but it's in the ocean, and that's what's melting, and it's melting faster than even the Arctic ice, believe it or not. So it's something that needs to be monitored.
So
for the Arctic ice, I hear that we might have the Northwest Passage after all, we might get a clear passage through the Arctic.
Yeah, it might happen sometime in our lifetime. It didn't happen this year, but it certainly could. Maybe next year with El Nino, we'll see. But probably not for at least a few more years, because if it happens too quickly, we're really in trouble.
So this is just a reminder that around the world, like it feels like it's so far away, but really it could really impact, especially New York City. This glacier that I believe is called, I have in our notes, A23A.
Oh, A23A. You're right. I missed it by one number. Yep, you're right.
I don't know if you know the answer to this. Do you know how glaciers are named? That is there like a numerical system? That's kind of an interesting name.
I'm not sure. I you got me. I can't really say offhand. Probably something like that, some categorical way. But the bigger ones are named. That is true.
So what else should we know in the way? What else should we know about the relationship between the melting ice, and the icebergs that are coming up in the north, and how we are impacted by it, but also how we impact the melting ice? What reminders could you give us on our relationship to this faraway phenomenon?
Well, I mean, again, it's warmer oceans, warmer temperatures, warmer oceans, more melting, and we got to watch for the. In the Atlantic, that there is a chance that the Gulf Stream could shut down, which would be disastrous. It hasn't done that, but there are some inklings that it has weakened a little bit. So there are many, many concerns, but the main concern is the sea level. If you even raise the sea level a few feet, you're inundating a lot more real estate. We're already seeing what we call king tides down in Miami, which are high tides that occur without really any storms, just an onshore flow and an astronomical high tide is all you need. And tonight's a full moon, by the way, so that's giving us a higher than normal tide because of that. So, yeah, there's definitely some things that we have to really watch with the melting ice. It's very, very disconcerting.
So I was going to ask you about that with the Monday night having a full moon. I've always wondered, is it just tides that the full moon affects, or does it have any other impact on weather?
A very good question. It indirectly affects the weather. The tides, you came on an interesting note. The tides change in water can actually change the temperature of the water a little bit, which, of course, can interact with the atmosphere and produce some change in the atmosphere. And what I've noticed is that some of the biggest nor'easters have occurred during full and new moons, because those are when the tides are the highest, when we have a half moon is the gravity of the sun and the moon are actually working against each other. But there's something to consider here. When you have the higher tides, like we said, that can have a bigger, that can make a storm have a bigger impact. Give you an example, Sandy. Now, Sandy occurred long before the moon was full, but it hit Atlantic City right during the full moon and the high tide. So that contributed to it causing so much trouble. It came at the worst possible time. So that added, unfortunately, bad situation, made it worse. I can name off a lot of storms where the tide or moon was full or new, but the superstorm of 93, I checked it, was actually doing between a new and a full moon. So that storm had nothing to do with the phase of the moon. And it was the tides weren't that much of a problem in that storm. But of course, that storm disrupted travel across the eastern seaboard. So yes, there is some indirect effect, but it's not a strong correlation. You can't say because it's going to be a full moon on whatever date, that means there's going to be a large storm. That's not how it works. But everything indirectly works with each other. So hopefully I explained that a little bit. Basically, the tides changing can change the water temperature and change some of the interaction with the atmosphere.
So interesting.
Thanks.
Yeah, you got it.
So you did mention that we had our first snow. At least where I saw it looked more like slush than proper snow. But so what are some things, as we're heading into the snowy time, what are some ways that we can help prepare ourselves? We talk a lot about climate change. And so what are some ways that we can navigate the winter and be aware of our energy consumption?
Okay, well, yeah, first of all, I'd start my snowblower today. This is probably a good time because we certainly have the next few days will be plenty cold enough for snow. Some of us are going to see lake effect snow, but no big coastals. But, and put your snow brushes in your car. Don't be caught without them. If you're out in the snow and it starts snowing and you don't have your snow brush and you're trying to use your glove or your hand or use your credit card to get rid of the frost, you might break your credit card. So have that all ready to go. It wouldn't hurt to have an emergency emergency kit in your car in case you do break down. People do break down. It's not just long trips either. You might be going to the mall and there's a breakdown and you hit a snow squall or something. Just be prepared. As far as, insulation and all that, well, just be ready for all the, have your house well insulated, have your furnace looked at, be ready for winter. Because it's going to be pretty cold starting off December. A lot of people thought it would be a mild December, but it's certainly not starting off that way.
Okay. And it's not starting off that way. And what's coming at us? It looks like it gets a little warmer later in the week.
Yes, it does. But the next 2 days will not be warm. They'll be in the low to mid-30s, wind chills in the 20s. Lake effect snow. There's a lake effect snow warning if you're going out up towards the Tug Hill Plateau, up to 2 feet of snow locally in spots. Maybe plowable snow down to almost Utica. We might even get a dusting here from snow, lake effect snow tonight and tomorrow. So just don't be totally alarmed. You wake up and there's a little snow on the ground tomorrow, hoping there isn't, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. So cold the next few days, like you said, moderating, and then a little bit of a rain situation on Friday. Should be rain because it'd be mild enough for that. And then maybe a bigger one late Sunday, Monday. Right now it looks warm enough for rain. We'll see, though, because it wouldn't take much of a shift of that to make it a little colder for snow. So something we got to keep an eye on. So there are potential for some accumulating snow in the next week to 10 days. Nothing likely, though.
So we have about 30 seconds left. We were talking about biking and talking about weather. So do you have what are some ways that bikers can be safe in the winter in 30 seconds?
Lots of lights. Lots of lights because you get the glare before sunset. It gets dark early. And unfortunately, there was a cyclist killed today on Central. Was it day or yesterday on Central Avenue in the middle of the day? Have lights, reflectivity, bundle up, bring warm gear. Because it gets cold fast. I personally don't like biking when it's below freezing. But and when you're biking, you might hit a patch of ice somewhere when you're turning. That road might be otherwise dry, but that little patch of ice can change your life in a heartbeat. So just be careful.
Thank you, Hugh.
You got it. Everyone, yeah, have a great week.
Thanks for joining us once again. We look forward to talking with you next week.
Excellent. You too.
Today we are joined by Jennifer Hadlock, who is with Fund for Reparations Now and Showing Up for Racial Justice NYC. Jennifer is here to talk about a New York State reparations bill that has passed both houses, but Governor Hochul has yet to sign it. Jennifer, welcome to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you for having me, EP.
So, Jennifer, can you just tell us, what is this Reparations Community Commission, or what is the legislation that has passed in New York State so far?
So the bill would create a task force, a New York State commission to study reparations remedies, and it will hold hearings throughout New York State, hearing from various stakeholders, and then we'll make recommendations to the legislature for any suggested remedies it deems proper. And the bill has been introduced for many years, but it finally passed the Assembly and the New York State Senate, and it is sitting on Governor Hochul's desk.
And just to dive into it a little bit further, why is the issue of reparations important now?
Well, we did have a racial reckoning a few years ago, and people thought, maybe we'll finally have some real change. But until we actually address one of the original sins of this country, the enslavement of Black people and all of the harms that have come since then due to race, we really can't have a true racial reckoning. The country can't live up to what it claims to be without addressing this. Sadly, it has taken this long for it to happen. And New York has a very special role because of our connections to insurance and money and the amount of money that was made in the North here due to slavery, as well as the amount of people who were enslaved here in New York.
And just to clarify, these bills that were passed in New York State House and New York State Senate is to study how to do reparations?
Yes.
Then down the line, there may be the possibility of some sort of reparations agreement. Could you just go into this a little bit further?
Sure, yes. The process has happened in California and a couple of more local communities where there is a group of people that is tasked with having hearings and doing research into the harms that have happened due to enslavement and racism, and then come up with some proposals about how to make repair for those harms. And this can range many, many different ways. People usually think of it just as money, but that is only one way of doing repair. It's an important way, but it's only one way. And so this would just be a group that would come up with proposals and hear all of the different harms and document that. And then there would have to be another step to actually implement or make the repairs. Yes. And that's the stage that California is at this moment. They have done the report, and now they are in the process of trying to figure out how to implement those different repairs.
Thanks for that, Jennifer. And so California is a bit ahead of New York, it sounds like, in this process. You're with the Fund for Reparations Now. What is your group like that California has come up with in their proposals?
Well, the Fund for Reparations Now has been around for several years trying to implement the National African American Reparations Commission 10-point plan. And there are 10 areas that NARC recommends for doing repair. It's a pretty detailed report. We like a lot of what California has done, and their report is really amazing. California did an amazing job of hosting hearings that were accessible and that lots and lots of people participated in. And they had some pretty intense conversations and got to discuss a lot of really important issues. And they've done an amazing report
which I recommend that people read to learn about the history of California and all of the harms that have happened there. I'm hoping that some of the things that came out, though, that may limit who is able to benefit will be better here in New York, and that we will be broader in thinking through how much harm has happened and that we can actually do repair in many ways instead of limiting.
And, you know, you've mentioned that this bill passed both the House and the Senate in New York State, and Hochul has yet to sign it. On Monday, November 20th, there will be a rally in New York City calling for a road for reparations, calling for Hochul to sign this. Is that the objective? Or could you tell us a little bit more about this planned rally on November 20th?
Yes. It's bringing together the New York City Black, Latino, and Asian caucus and the New York State Black, Puerto Rican, Hispanic, and Asian caucuses to try to pressure Governor Hochul to sign the bill. And as a person of European descent who lives in New York City, I feel very strongly that this is an important bill to be signed by the governor, and I hope she will do the right thing and sign it so we can move forward.
Now, Governor Hochul finally signed the Clean Slate bill this week. Yes. What do you know, or why do you think she has yet to sign the reparations bill?
I don't know why she hasn't signed it. There actually were some changes at the very last minute in the session to try to make her more likely to sign it. She gets to appoint three people onto the commission, which was not in the original version of the bill. So I thought that that would make it more likely that she would sign. And I don't think that she has made any public statement about why she hasn't signed yet. So, yes, she's still signing bills. So there is still hope that she will sign it.
Now, Jennifer, as we start to wrap up this interview, I'm wondering what I haven't asked you that is important to know about this bill and your work around it.
I think there's a perception that a lot of white people would be against this, but I actually find that a lot of people believe that it is necessary and that it is important and that there needs to be repair in order for us to be able to be a racially just society. And it's interesting to me that white people think other white people won't be for it, which just adds to this strange dynamic. But I ask everyone to call Governor Hochul and let her know that you think that she should sign this bill and that we need to have a reparations commission and actually do reparations.
Jennifer Hadlock, thank you for joining us today on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you so much, EP, for having me.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. Patricia R. Doxey reports in the Daily Freeman that an analysis about the Universal Basic Monthly Income Program in Kingston found that participants reported improved financial health and increased sense of self-worth and an enhanced quality of life. The analysis was conducted by the University of Pennsylvania. There is a similar program in the city of Hudson. Former Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan, who now represents the area in Congress, initiated the program. Participants received a guaranteed monthly income of $500 a month for 14 months, with the amount decreasing each of the last 3 months of the program. The report said, and I quote, "Findings from the pilot indicate that despite the extraordinary stressors of the global pandemic and unprecedented nationwide inflation, the treatment group held steady or improved in many of the primary outcomes measured, while these same outcomes declined for the control group. Although the treatment group exhibited minor declines in specific areas such as psychological distress, on average they experienced greater improvements in financial health, physical health, housing, and food security compared to the control group. Further, these stable and positive trends among GI recipients held steady even after the cash disbursements ended, end quote. Lee, who has received $500 a month, said, and I quote, "Before the program, I wouldn't have gone to the doctors because I had always, you know, going back to, like, the things that I cut out, like doctor's appointments. I didn't even think about doctor's appointments because I just was like, whatever. You know, I don't need to get my teeth cleaned," end quote. The study found 50% of those in the program were employed full-time at the start, compared to 32% in the control group. At the end of the program, 59% of the recipients were employed full-time, while only 47% were in the control group. Current Ulster County Executive Jen Metzger said, and I quote, "We now have measurable data from our own county indicating that cash assistance helps reduce poverty and its associated risk and harms while enabling our residents to gain more agency and control over their lives," end quote. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Andrea Mako reports in Porcupine Soup that Governor Kathy Hochul's office announced on November 28th that State Route 23A in Hunter and Tannersville will be resurfaced from Route 296 to Scribner Hollow Road. $1.1 million out of the $100 million funding package will go to the mountain road in Greene County. Hochul said, and I quote, "From a devastating blizzard to historic flooding, we are living in a time of record-breaking weather events which have left many roads across New York State in need of repair and rejuvenation. This $100 million will lengthen the lifespan of dozens of roads across the state, making them more resilient in the face of future extreme weather conditions," end quote. The resurfacing work will happen in the spring of 2024. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. Jack Arpey reports in New York State of Politics that last week, New York's Court of Appeals ruled that bicyclists have the same rights as motor vehicle drivers in traffic stops. The court ruled that traffic stops associated with bicycles should require the same standard for police as automobile stops. Daniel Lambright, senior staff attorney for the New York Civil Liberties Union, said, and I quote, "Biking is often thought of as a leisurely activity, but it's becoming more integrated into the daily lives of individuals. It's important to protect them and make sure they aren't being stopped on a whim by an officer with a mere suspicion," end quote. Peter Kehoe, executive director of the New York Sheriff's Association, disagreed with the court, saying, and I quote, "Even though their intuition tells them something is wrong, there isn't enough probable cause or reasonable suspicion to stop that person, so they can't stop them," end quote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Agitpop was an art punk band from Poughkeepsie, formed in 1981 with albums on Twin Tones.